Bloom Shapiro, accounting, tax, and business advisors. Asking the questions no one else asks. Creating solutions no one else can. Because achieving your success is how Bloom Shapiro measures theirs. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin along with John Kropczyk. And John, we hear so many of these impossible to believe creation stories about businesses started in a garage. Yeah. In my garage, I can't find anything. It's such a mess. How am I going to create the next great thing in that garage?
Well, it's where we were talking about Bill Gates and Mr. Apple, Steve Jobs and
all these guys in their garage. Yeah. How did they even afford a garage at that time when they were young guys? Oh, it was their parents'
garage.
Yeah. Even worse.
Get out of my garage. What about my car in there?
Now, did Mark Zuckerberg, no, he started it in his dorm room.
Yeah.
So that's a different creation story. Yeah. Well, anyway, there's a sense that we have that everyone out there is working on the next big thing, right, John? I mean, we have that idea that they have five patents and unbridled ambition and a path forward and it's all going to work. But, you know, the truth is there are a lot of those people out there.
Oh, I'm sure.
They're dreamers. Sure. Yeah. We used to have a guy, remember?
But they don't own homes because my list for getting stuff done does not involve.
Right, exactly. Creating the next great thing. It's cleaning out the next messiest thing. I know. And listen, what's really interesting is we had a guy who used to call our radio program, wonderful man, and he had all these patents and all these ideas, and he would always come to us, John, if you recall, saying, Larry, you've got to be able to move this idea. And I'd say to him, Bob, I don't know how. I'm not certain. It sounds really interesting what you've done, but I don't know where to take it from here. And there are so many people, I'm sure, like that. And then there are people who really figure it out to some extent. I mean, they get something off the ground or they at least begin the process and maybe they set up a small shop and they try to build this or do that, whatever it may be. But many times, as much as they have the dream and the desire, they really perhaps are missing one of the major ingredients. And one of those ingredients, John, is knowing how financially you're going to put the package together while you're dreaming, while you're designing, while you're building. How do you really put it together so for the long term it's going to work for you?
Yeah, well, let's say, and prototypes and all that, there's a lot, too, coming from your big idea to getting it to market. So
exactly.
But how many times have you seen something you said,
why didn't I think of that?
Or I did think of that. Why didn't I do something?
Most of those things I think of are things that are only sold on television. Gee, why didn't I think of something that really could, turn bottle caps without even using your hands or something? I don't know. All these crazy things. But America has all these guys and gals who are into widgets and digits and doing all kinds of amazing things. But what you may find interesting, John, that I learned in the course of preparing for a podcast on these entrepreneurs is that we have a lack of them now in America. They say that, in fact, entrepreneurship is down pretty dramatically in this country. Now, this predates the coronavirus situation. Maybe as a result of that, there are many people sitting at home, and they are redesigning their lives and taking that dream of that idea they've had and really spending some time with it. I don't know, but it's been down dramatically, so much so that there's been a bipartisan committee of Congress set up to help encourage what can we do as policymakers to take those dreamers and give them the tools that they need.
Wow, I didn't realize this. You know, maybe it's we were kind of before the coronavirus, we were in a do more with less kind of work thing, and maybe you didn't have time. I don't know. That's interesting.
Well, we're going to talk about that in this podcast with Wayne Titus III, and he's somebody who works with all of these entrepreneurs to make certain that financially they have a design so they can take their idea and bring it to market. I mean, it's just like when we hear about this vaccine that everybody's working on, and they say once you get to the point, if we ever do, of sorting and filling, that's a whole nother process. So you may have the design, you may have the product, but can you duplicate
right.
it? Can you manufacture
market,
it? And can you distribute it?
Right.
There are so many aspects to this that we take for granted when we see it on a store shelf. We really do.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, you don't think about that, how that all works.
No, these are special people, and it takes a lot of determination. So we want to talk about it because crisis does present opportunity. Well, John, today, out of this crisis, let's see what opportunities do present themselves, and let's figure out why it is that fewer people in America are attempting to envision and then create that dream that they've had in their head for a long time. So we'll talk to Wayne about it today on America Trends.
With me on the line is Wayne Titus III, and he's got all kinds of initials after his name. So he is a guy who's got a lot of qualification to speak on the topic that we brought him here to talk with you about. It's called The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. And Wayne, let's start off with the whole notion of what is an entrepreneur?
Sure, Larry. Well, I think sometimes people have a very narrow definition of entrepreneurs. They think that they're just people that, start up businesses and, you know, they manufacture new products that are going to just take over the marketplace or do that kind of a thing. When actually entrepreneurs, you can find entrepreneurs pretty much in every single sector out there. You know, physicians that are in physician groups that provide very specialized services are entrepreneurs. Same with dental groups, attorneys that specialize, people in the financial services industry. So, it's not just manufacturing and making things. It's actually providing services.
But do you have to kind of be busting through some kind of a curtain or wall that's been established and doing something in a uniquely different way to be considered that? Because if I'm starting a small business, and it may be a business that, you know, historically it's been pretty well known, but I'm using some different techniques or I'm using digital, products or what have you to enhance it. Am I an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think you are an entrepreneur. But you could be an entrepreneur just having a coffee shop on the corner as well, and providing a service to your community. You know, in Plymouth, we have a local, kind of a buy local movement as they do in many neighborhoods around the country. And those are all in place, in essence, to help entrepreneurs that are in various kinds of businesses across there. So I think you do find high-tech entrepreneurs and leading-edge entrepreneurs, but you also find real kind of traditional entrepreneurs. And I think that's the breadth of entrepreneurship. It's owning your business that makes you an entrepreneur, right?
Now, do we find that a lot of entrepreneurs are really visionary? They've got lofty goals, they've got ideas galore, they love and are excited about what they're doing, and yet they may not be the best as it relates to management, because I know you're offering some services to them, particularly about financial planning, because you can have a great idea and it can go down the chute pretty quickly if you make some mistakes, particularly as it relates to being well enough capitalized and the like.
That's exactly right. And I think many times, you know, people have dreams of starting their own business. And I think that having the dream to start things and being a visionary is an important aspect that may just, you know, kind of start to separate, the cream from the rest of it. The folks that have that vision and can drive that vision and passion don't necessarily have all the expertise that they might need to do the accounting work or to understand the legal implications of what they do, or sometimes even the detailed technical implications. They might need to work with an integrator to help them kind of manage the business or to develop a specific product, you know, more technical folks. So I think it's important to understand that you do have entrepreneurs that are visionaries, but you also have entrepreneurs that are just really good at business. They can jump into any kind of a business. There's a term out there called serial entrepreneur, where people just go out and they look for new businesses. How can I take this business and make it the best?
Now, I'm reading because you know that this podcast deals with trends in our society, business, the environment, a whole range of things. And I'm reading where business formation rates in the U.S. have fallen to a nearly 40-year low, according to the U.S. Census data that I saw from 2014. And there's even legislation to deal with this. So what's happening to entrepreneurship in the United States?
Yeah, I think it's also important to understand that right now, about 40 or 41% of private sector payroll is all due to small business. And so as you see that shrinkage, right, you're going to see larger and larger corporations are either picking up some of that payroll, or really what's happening is larger businesses are becoming more efficient, basically driving, you know, these smaller businesses out of business. And so to be able to compete and have the staying power, you know, an entrepreneur has to understand what is that competitive landscape. And I believe that's actually one of the significant things that we're not dealing with right now, is the understanding of how large businesses are destroying the fabric of our society, which is built on small business.
Well, small business, you pointed out to me in some documents that you sent me, from 2000 to 2018, small businesses created 9.6 million net new jobs. And you say that's about 65% of all the job creation in America, while the large businesses created 5.2 million. But you're also saying at the same time that you're seeing this overwhelming change that's going on as it relates to big business crowding out some of these small businesses. I think a lot of us see that on Main Street, where we've got a lot of empty storefronts, and people will always point to, say, Amazon.
Right. Yeah. My business actually is located, ironically, on Main Street in Plymouth, Michigan. And, you know, we support those small business owners and they support us. You know, our business is to serve our community, not just like a Plymouth, Michigan, but our community of clients around the country. We serve clients in 25 states around the country. So you can be a small business and actually have a pretty large footprint now with the technology and make a big impact. But if you're in Amazon's business or, you know, retail, it's very, very difficult to compete against that. We see businesses closing in downtown Plymouth and store owners that have been there for, we had a store owner just a couple weeks ago announced that they were retiring after 40 years. Nobody to sell the business to, right? So these are, I think, big problems that we need to deal with and to kind of explore.
And I would imagine that there was a generation before, say, the generation that's coming up today, where in many of these businesses, if they're small, they're family businesses, and maybe the next generation is not there, not prepared, or not interested in maintaining the work, or looking at what it's going to take in order to thrive, given all the changes in our economy, and perhaps they're even walking away from that continuum of a family business.
Sure. Large businesses have the, you know, the biggest advantage they have is that ability to scale and to obtain services at a lower cost than maybe the folks that have businesses on Main Street or to obtain inventory or raw materials at a lower cost. And so there is not a level playing field when it comes to small business versus somebody that has the scale of Amazon. You think about the small coffee shop owner on the corner trying to compete with Starbucks, right? Starbucks has systems, they have processes, they train their people on, you know, how to deal with their clientele. They have a brand, you know, that attracts people. They have an experience, right? It's now you hear people talking about client experience and how important that is. Mm-hmm. I think small businesses need to understand what is that client experience. And you know, every client that walks in the front door is important. If you can't give them a good client experience, what will make them come back?
But somebody who might want to buy, and now I'm not certain if Starbucks is a franchise, I really haven't looked into that. I mean, there are many folks who decide that they want to be entrepreneurial, but they want to go into a franchise to kind of help them guard against some of the risk, because as you say, they've got the marketing plan already in place. Maybe they've looked already at the appropriateness of location, which is so important. So with those people who decide to become franchisees, they could be considered entrepreneurs, could they not?
Yeah, I guess they could to some extent. You know, they're not necessarily building the business from the ground up. Right? Mm. They're building the business or extending the business that was already put in place for them. They didn't develop the systems or the processes. They're implementing them. So it's really, I don't know. Some might argue that a franchise owner might be an entrepreneur, but I do see them as a business owner, but not somebody that's actually developing that business from the ground up. Typically, I look at an entrepreneur as somebody that says, I'm going to go do this, and they pull the things together to deliver that.
Okay, that's a really helpful description of what we're talking about. What percentage of the population? I know that we're seeing some declines, and we will talk about some of the efforts to stem that decline. But of the population, could we consider 2% of the people, 5% of the people have that entrepreneurial spirit? Because I would imagine in America, historically, people have really thought that the horizon is endless and that the possibilities are great. And why not strike out on your own? I'm just wondering if we have a percentage for that.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the exact percentage is. I can tell you, though, you know, with my experience with Entrepreneurs Organization or Entrepreneurs Accelerator group, which is a kind of helping startups, you know, in working with them, the statistics that I've seen from them say that when you start a business, less than 1% of the business startups ever get to $1 million of revenue.
Hmm.
And it's after 5 years, you know. If you can stay in business for 5 years or so, you're more likely to be able to keep being successful. But so many businesses fail in the first. I was talking with an entrepreneur actually last night on the phone, and one of their first businesses they started up, they failed within 30 days. You know, it's just,
wow.
They started up probably 10 or 15 businesses since then. So, you know, you can't let that failure daunt you. If you're really truly a passionate entrepreneur, you're going to continue to push because you believe in what you're trying to accomplish. That's not to say that you can't fail. You know, when you start up a business, a lot do.
Yeah. I mean, to the forward in your book, you didn't write it, but another gentleman, and it was pretty rosy scenario of entrepreneurship. Be your own person, accountable to no one, except, of course, family, creditors, regulators. I'm adding this. Customers. How carefree. I mean, it takes a certain collection of attributes to really do this. I mean, to step out, particularly if somebody really got the motivation because they've been working 9 to 5 for someone else, but yet they realize that they've got an idea, or maybe they don't like the way that company's being run. But still, it's not as carefree as one might like to imagine.
Oh, no, of course it's not. When I left my job with a big four accounting firm to start my business, it was like jumping off a cliff. I'd introduce myself to people and tell them I left this job, or they'd ask what business I was in. I would tell them, you know, in financial services. They would look at me and they'd say, oh, that's great. And then they would literally, I see in their eyes, like they're thinking, this guy is crazy. This is, you know, the market has just crashed and he's starting up a financial services firm. What is he, nuts? You know, entrepreneurs are a little nuts, but they have to be resilient, right? You're not a successful entrepreneur if you can't be resilient. It's difficult, you know, managing your business, managing your employees, making sure that you're spending enough time with your family and having that balance. There isn't any true, you know, equal balance. It's just always, the ground is always shifting under your feet. You have to be nimble. You have to keep moving, and you have to keep looking ahead when you're doing this.
You talk about behavioral governance, and I know Don Trone in his foreword did, you did later in your book. Explain what that is, because you consider that to be a very important concept here.
Yeah, so there's leadership, stewardship, and governance are kind of key areas that Don focuses on when he talked about behavioral governance. But you know, having leadership skills, the question that he always says, are leaders, you know, born or are they developed or educated? And it's a bit of both, right? You have to have the ability, some innate abilities, but then you also have to continually work on yourself. Stewardship is, you know, when you're thinking about the responsibility that you have for others, not just, well, you know, your clients. In my business, I'm a fiduciary, so, you know, I have to think about what's in my client's best interest versus thinking about my wallet. Well, a lot of times businesses are thinking about just pure profit, but if your business is going to be successful, it has to be a relationship where, you know, both parties are gaining an advantage by, you know, by basically working together, right? The government aspect is understanding the things that you need to do to make sure, you know, your business is running smoothly. If you've got a regulatory aspect of things, what are you to do to develop and maintain the systems and processes that you have and improve them overall? So those stewardship, leadership, and governance, all of that kind of has to meld together to accomplish what's most important for that entrepreneur, for that client, for that community. So Don's steps there, I think, are really important for leaders and entrepreneurs to think about.
We'll be back with more of this America Trends podcast in 30 seconds. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers over 40 years of experience in a broad base of services from accounting and tax to cybersecurity, technology, and transaction advisory. Bloom's experts will maintain an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
We're talking to Wayne Titus. The book is called The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. Now, I want to get back to the trend that we're seeing, which is that while entrepreneurship has increased in the last couple of years, overall it's been on a decline for about 40 years. Last September, two senators, Tim Scott, Amy Klobuchar, introduced the Enhancing Entrepreneurship for the 21st Century Act, and it would mandate an assessment and analysis of the decline. I mean, what are they looking to do? I mean, they know that this is definitely a pattern and a trend. What are they looking to arrest? How are they looking to arrest that trend? Or are they just looking to study it more so we can figure out what's going on?
Yeah, I think they're trying to raise, you know, really, you see in politics, they try to raise awareness with, you know, with these acts that they're passing. And I think that it's important to raise that awareness. There was an article that was in Inc. magazine recently that talked about kind of six priority areas for Capitol Hill, you know, maybe possibly improving R&D, making a more friendly SBA. They talked about the importance of the Secure Act, which I can talk more about later if you'd like, but helping companies implement retirement systems for their employees. So there's a number of things that this article talked about. The thing that I think that the article didn't talk about that I think we should be talking about, and hopefully this investigation or this research that they look into, what they'll find is, you know, to me, it seems that the decline, as we were talking earlier, the decline in small business is really the offset or the opposite of the rise of large business, right? We if you think about it, and pretty much in any industry that you look at, you have really big players that are coming into play that haven't been there before. I mean, Amazon is a startup. You know, they started doing some things, and they are branching out into areas that were never perceived kind of when they started. And they're going to be a very hard competitor for small businesses, obviously, to compete with. Doctors and hospital groups. You had entrepreneurial physicians that, you know, had businesses that now are being absorbed by, you know, large hospitals.
Yeah, the private practice is something that is getting rarer and rarer, and you see that they're all affiliated with the larger groups. So, but with the digitalization of our society, I mean, isn't this inevitable? Because you can scale up so quickly utilizing the new technology. I mean, how do you buttress against that?
Well, I think there's many entrepreneurs that are doing just that. They're trying to come up with a new idea or the new technology and to scale that business and then to sell it, in essence, right, to exit the business. Recently in the financial services industry, there's been an announcement where Charles Schwab is buying TD Ameritrade's, registered investment advisory custody mm-hmm. business. And that consolidation is going to be, that's in front of review and all of that kind of stuff. But it's uncertain how that's going to impact smaller advisors. Like, what's going to be the hurdle for entry? What technology are they going to have to put in place? And so you've got these advisors that may work with clients individually that now aren't going to be able to compete because the rug's pulled out, from under their feet. I think it's important to stay on the cutting edge of technology. Systems and processes are probably the things that are ignored the most by an entrepreneur when they're starting up their business, unless they're specifically, their product is that. And so we find that there's many advisors for entrepreneurs that aren't helping them see the importance of making sure that they have good internal processes as it relates to their financial and accounting systems, as it relates to their onboarding clients, as it relates to bringing employees in and having an understanding of what kind of employees should they be looking for in interviewing in order to deliver their client service experience. There's so much behind the curtain that entrepreneurs need to be able to think about and small business needs to be able to think about. They can't compete against the large organization that already has those things developed. And so there is quite a bit of tension, I think, between large and small.
I would think that entrepreneurship really means seeing around walls. I mean, you've got to be able to see gaps into which you can insert yourself and your skills or your new idea. And we know that there's been so much creative destruction and dismantlement of larger businesses as well as small businesses. So today, I mean, how competitive is it out there?
I think it's extremely competitive. And yeah, seeing around corners, I think, is important. So when you have an entrepreneur that's a visionary and they can see, hey, if I pivot in this direction, I may be able to pick up some additional business or be able to be more competitive. That's certainly a good attribute to have. But many times they don't know, okay, when I make that pivot, how am I going to grow and scale my business? So they may be able to see around that corner, but they may not actually know how to do it. And that's where having the right advisors involved is important, because they may not have, not everybody is perfectly an entrepreneur. There's, like I was saying before, there's different aspects of entrepreneurship. You can be a visionary or you might be an integrator. Typically, you're not all things to all, as it relates to entrepreneurship.
And that's why at many different stages of the development of a business, we see where the pioneer started it, and then you bring in somebody who's more managerial. I know a lot of people, for example, didn't think that Steve Jobs could be replaced, but Tim Cook, who's a very different type of individual, seems to be doing a good job there. But it just is the life cycle of these businesses. Let me ask you, I know that in this Entrepreneur Act that is being put forward in a bipartisan way, that they're looking at a lot of things, and I just like your comments, they're looking at demographic changes caused by an aging workforce. So maybe these baby boomers who were entrepreneurial, they're now retiring out of the industry. You've got a lot of the concentration that we talked about with Amazon. Risk aversion, maybe, after the recession, which really took its toll, that we sometimes forget in America. We like to move past things quickly, but that was only about 10, 11 years ago. And difficulties accessing capital. Tell us, when you look at that stew, what do you see? Do you think these are all relevant factors?
Yeah, I think you can't point to one particular, one thing. I think it's probably a combination of all the things you just mentioned. Small businesses are not on the same playing field as some of these larger businesses, and they don't have the expertise that they need in order to be highly competitive if they don't have the right people on their team or the right advisors working with them to help them, cross those bridges or see around those corners if they can't see around them. So, having a good team, I think, is critical. Having a great idea is awesome. But if you don't have a good team to help you implement, it's virtually impossible to to scale and grow that business.
Now, some people say if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And in Washington, we know that lobbying has great impact. We know that large companies have a lot of lobbyists. And there are some who say that startups are at a disadvantage because of monetary policy, that for those who are real big players on Wall Street may be a great thing. So money is cheap and the big guys can borrow and buy back their own shares and so forth. How limiting is that to the entrepreneurial class these days?
I think it's very limiting. You know, Citizens United was a huge court case, you know, a number of years ago that basically said speech is money, right? If you have money, you can have as much speech as you want. And a small entrepreneur does not have the same level of speech as a large corporation. So lobbyists are extremely important from that aspect. But there isn't, you know, there are entrepreneurial groups out there, but they don't have the deep pockets, you know, like, you know, larger companies do. They have basically unlimited free speech to be able to manage those messages to the public or to the politicians, and small businesses at a distinct and great disadvantage.
You say in your book that you think it's really important for somebody who really feels that they've got an idea, that they're an entrepreneur, of getting integrative advice. So for somebody who's out there listening, thinking about something that they have developed or designed or whatever it may be, whatever stage of development, how do they begin to think about integrative advice to move this idea along?
Well, I think for you to be able to move an idea along, you have to have a stable financial platform. In order to have a stable financial platform, you need to understand that when you're dealing with an attorney or you're dealing with an accountant or CPA, a financial, a venture capitalist or a financial advisor that's giving you advice on a retirement plan, those people are specialists in their particular area, and they typically give advice on their particular area. Rarely do these advisors work together in providing or understanding what the nuances are across the organization. Think about if you're building one of these great cathedrals in Europe or one of these great structures in Egypt, you know, with the pyramids. You had one master builder. They had an idea on how that was supposed to work, and then you had many people putting that solution into place, right? Building these beautiful structures.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you have skyscrapers, you know, that are 100 stories tall. You don't have one master builder. You have a team of experts, people that understand the motion of wind. They understand the soil that you're building upon and the stresses that building's going to go through. They also understand that you've got, you know, water pipes you've got to get up to the 100th floor and electrical systems and complex computers to run the internal environment. They can't do that all on their own. They have to work collaboratively in order to deliver that product to the future, right? And that's what an entrepreneur needs to have on their, you know, with them. Because they are not the expert in everything, they need to assemble a team of experts that can help move the organization along. The entrepreneur may be able to see around corners, but they may not have the ability to grow and scale that organization and to deal with that competitive landscape. And
do you find that that's one of their key problems? In other words, they're rugged individuals who really may be a little bit stubborn, feeling or sensing that they can kind of do it all. Do you feel that that's one of the areas where entrepreneurship really falls down quickly and hard?
Yeah, I think entrepreneurs are proud of what they accomplish in business. I had just a quick story. I had an entrepreneur friend that just sold their business, and I got a call, and he said, my CPA just told me how much I was going to pay in taxes, and I don't understand, you know, do I really need to pay this much in taxes? And I said, well, let's talk about that, and we worked through some things, and we were actually able to work with a CPA, and, you know, as a financial advisor, I'm also a CPA, but so I understood the tax implications, and we developed and implemented some retirement plans, which actually helped him shelter some money at the very end of the transaction. But that CPA was just doing what they were asked to do. Tell me how much tax I'm going to have to pay on the sale of this business. That's not what the entrepreneur really needed to hear. They needed to hear, this is what you're going to pay if you don't look at these other opportunities to shelter tax. Ultimately, the goal was to keep as much money as they could for their families and then to pull that money out in later in retirement, potentially at a lower tax rate. So that integrated approach was certainly much better than just the siloed approach of listening to what the CPA had to tell them. That was a compliance answer. So when I think about advisors, you know, you've got advisors that are paternalistic, do what I say. Advisors that are informative, that say, here's all your options, pick one. And then interpretive advisors that help you see and understand all these different nuances so that you can make the best choice, you know, for you, your company, and your family.
Wayne, I don't want to get around the issue because I know you wanted to say something about it earlier in our conversation about the Secure Act. I did an entire half-hour podcast on it, but as it relates to entrepreneurs, very briefly, what do you think the implications of this new Secure Act are?
Well, I think there's some helpful things with the Secure Act, you know, as it relates to putting plans in place. The insurance lobby was very strong with that. With the annuities and the inclusion of annuities in retirement plans. I'm not necessarily in agreement with that, but that's a strong component of it. I think the most important thing for entrepreneurs to understand is how does it impact them, not now, but 20 years from now? Because if they're building, you know, entrepreneurs want to build security for themselves and their families. If they have assets in retirement accounts, and those assets are going to pass to beneficiaries, there is a, you know, the negative aspects of the Secure Act is an accelerated distribution of wealth into the taxable stream of income for their beneficiaries. And
right, the stretch IRA is now limited to 10 years. Yeah,
exactly. It's an elimination. And in some cases, Larry, it's 5 years.
Mm. Hmm.
And so people aren't talking about this. And so making sure that an entrepreneur has their estate structured in a way that understands what these limitations are and that they have the trusts in place to make sure that these things are working properly together, that's the integrated approach that I'm talking about. Integrating financial, tax, and investment strategy holistically for an entrepreneur and their beneficiaries is really important, especially now with the Secure Act, because much of that family asset is going to be lost to taxes if they don't address things now so that they can minimize that impact over the next 20 or 40 years.
Let me ask you in closing, we've been talking about a lot of the business-related aspects of entrepreneurship. It's an emotional journey. I mean, you point that out mm-hmm. in the book. It is. And how do people deal with all the ups and downs? Or what should they be prepared for, they and their family, going into this so with their eyes wide open?
Well, it's not easy, right? It's difficult. I think that there is areas of expertise where you need help, and you need to seek that help and make sure that it's integrated advice. It's not, silo advice. Just a quick comment on that. You know, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep after taxes. And so it's really important to have a good understanding of how the tax laws impact you and your business and consequently your family and your family savings. So if you can, you know, assemble the right team to help you take that integrated approach, it's going to be much easier than if you just try to either do it yourself or you don't take an integrated approach where you're just dealing with a silo, because you're going to miss out on opportunities. It's all about, if you want to be competitive, you want to be effective and efficient. And if you don't have the right team around you, you're going to be inefficient and ultimately not as effective as you could have been otherwise. You might still be successful, but it's going to be a slog.
Okay, Wayne Titus, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Very interesting conversation about the state of entrepreneurship and the resources you need to pull together as you take the plunge. The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. Thank you so much for being with us today on America Trends Podcast.
Larry, it was my pleasure, and I have a great positive outlook for entrepreneurs out there. I think they can do well if they put the right team together.
America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network, mhnrnetwork.com. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers 40 years of experience in industries from manufacturing to professional services to nonprofit.